Good morning. Welcome to the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM in Toronto. I'm Phil Taylor, your host, and we've got an going to be touching on some important matters this morning, and urgent ones, as a matter of fact. We're going to be speaking with Mona Ghassemi of the Iranian Canadian community. Congress, pardon me, I believe is Mona's on the line. Are you there, Mona?
Yes, I'm here. Yeah. Thank you for having me, Phil.
Well, we're really glad to be talking to you. The Iranian Canadian Congress is a nonprofit, nonpartisan, and non-religious organization established in 2007 to represent the interests of Iranian Canadians and encourage their participation in Canadian society. Mona, and of course, you're the president of this organization. Inevitably, we have to start with, we want to talk to you about the work of the Congress, but of course, there's been this renewal of attacks by the U.S. government on Islamic Republic. And I just wonder, do you have any sort of news of that, or what's an assessment? Do you know what the Congress will be saying about this?
Yes, well, I was enjoying my weekend when I got your call, and it seems that that's how these go usually. They strike on the weekend when people are not paying attention, but we'll definitely be discussing this. But my understanding is that, there were strikes on Larak Island, which is where Iran is controlling the Strait of Hormuz, where those seas are going, and where they're managing that. Of course, we're 6 months into a war of choice by the U.S. On Iran, which started on the 28th of February with the assassination of the head of state, former. Supreme Leader Ali Khamenei, and 168 school children in a small town in the south of Iran, Minab, as well as many other civilians. And I emphasize that this is a war by the Trump administration, because the people in the U.S. Did not want this war. It's affecting them too negatively. And, the Trump administration has had a lot of overreach in his last term, and affecting Canada as well. Mm-hmm. So Iran has responded to those recent strikes by striking the U.S. bases in Jordan, where purportedly the strikes against Iran were carried out. Uh-huh. And this has happened in the context of Iran and Oman negotiating an agreement to discuss how that safe passage through the strait will be managed between the two, because the Strait of Hormuz is the territorial waters of Iran and Oman.
Yes. And by the way, your organization is Iranian Canadian Congress. You pointed this out actually prior to these attacks. Of course, it hasn't been terribly helpful that the others in the international community, who are actually frightened of Trump, but they repeat some of the things he says. And it's my recollection of the statement, but by the Congress, was that there's some confusion in that people use the term international waters. But could you address that issue of whose waters we're talking about? And by the way, transit of the Strait has been going on. It's only been damaged because Israel and the United States attacked, right?
Yes. Yes, of course. Let me respond to that second part. The way I see it, this control of the Strait of Hormuz is a very strong strategic maneuver by Iran. And let's not forget that currency manipulation. we know that this is affecting the world economy, the U.S. economy, but. Back in January, Scott Bessent, the U.S. Treasury Secretary, had boasted about manipulating the currency in Iran through a dollar shortage to cause unrest in the country, and which we saw the results of.
Yeah.
And the U.S. had economic sanctions on Iran since 1979, for 47 years. Like, it's not, the Iranian response, in my view, in the view of many people around me and within the Congress, has always been quite measured, because, of course, Iran is trying to maintain its own stability and doesn't want to provoke the U.S., but the U.S. has been provoking Iran,
yes.
And and also I want to mention that there's been there's Venezuela, Cuba, this list of overreach by U.S. Trump. Of course, the U.S. has been in the past, responsible for a lot of wars. People don't talk so much about the Korean War. The Korea was split. Vietnam, but recently, the genocide in Palestine would not be possible if it were not for U.S. Support,
yes,
military and financial support of Israel. But now we are seeing that Trump is also threatening his neighbors. What we saw, I think it was just in the news last week, about renaming Lake Ontario to Lake America, which, Lake Ontario is the traditional name, which...
it's the internationally agreed term.
Internationally agreed term, and it's the traditional name that, the white European settlers, when they attempted the genocide of the native peoples of these countries, at least, they were not fully successful, but at least we should maintain those old traditional names and teach about them to the children in schools. So I think this is ridiculous. And so that was, its ancient name before the settlers. So it doesn't make any sense. And the Gulf of Mexico. And he had
almost forgot about it. It's, by the way, it's maybe it's an encouraging thing, is that people have reacted with disgust and almost amusement because Trump tried to call it the Gulf of America, but as far as I know, that actually hasn't taken. And people, the international community continues. It is the Gulf of Mexico, but he really gives away the whole game when he talks this way. And of course, he talked about changing the Persian Gulf, right?
Yes, yeah, and that's what I was going to get to. I think back in May, he had talked about changing the name of the Persian Gulf to the Arabian Gulf, and it seems whenever he has some disagreement with the another country, this is some kind of, psychological aspect of, his warfare.
Well, you've made a great point on this thing about how when he beats on one country, he also threatens, there's a proverb, beat on the saddle to educate the horse. When they kidnapped Maduro, in Venezuela, and now they're taking over the oil, a good portion of it. They said it openly; they're taking it, and even Venezuelan leaders, so-called, are agreeing. He said, this will put Canada on notice. He was talking, you know, he's stealing from Venezuela and mentions Canada.
Yeah, and of course there's that tariff war and, you know, and Carney, you know, as we remember back in Davos, made comments regarding, you know, how Canada should not, you know, should stand up for itself somewhat. And, you know, there's been a little bit of a shift in the discourse in the Canadian both in politics and, you know, among citizens, you know, and we're seeing, you know, now with the products in the grocery stores being labeled as made in Canada and so on, because Canadians have pride. Yes. And don't want to be taken over by another country. And I hope that this also leads Canadians to have, you know, remove that veil. Yes. That, you know, America is our lovely, friendly neighbor. And the same things that are happening with, that has happened with countries in the global south, third world countries and so on.
It could happen to us.
It can happen to us. And those countries have been demonized. You know, there's a lot of, you know, demonization of Iran.
Yes.
You know, other countries like, you know, Cuba, because they have communism, you know, there was that whole propaganda, right? Anti-communist propaganda, which continues. But I think that with the developments now, the U.S. Has overreached and people are starting to see... more and more, the whole.
Indeed, actually, maybe a symptom of that. You must have noticed this. There was a lot of pride in the conduct of the Iranian soccer team when they participated in the World Cup, and were treated so shabbily. There was worldwide sympathy for them. Where it was not ideological; it was that this is just not how you behave towards a sovereign people with a long civilization, and they behaved so well. People were very impressed. But that gives an indication that we're talking about an isolated U.S. when it comes to actual the conduct. There is a repulsion and fear, actually, around the world, and that Iran actually... in these matters has come through rather well. But your organization, the Iranian-Canadian Congress, are taking up the issue, seems to me very timely, of why don't we have the first word in our international vocabulary, diplomacy and mutual respect among states. You can have differences, but you have to have embassies. You have to be able to do business with a people. People have to be able to get visas. They have to be able to travel. Can you talk about that subject?
Yes, absolutely. So we have chosen to focus on this issue in the coming year as part of our strategic planning for the year. We would like to reopen the consulate, and in order to do that, we would like to, you know, get a meeting with the Minister of Foreign Affairs, and we need to work towards that this year. And as we spoke in the past, you know, Iranians in Canada cannot vote in their own elections back home. They do, even though they have dual citizenship. Travel is difficult. These are issues that affect ordinary people. And as you said, and as did I get cut off? Can you hear me?
Pardon me?
Okay. I just wanted to make sure I was not cut off. There was a strange noise.
We got you. We got you.
Okay. But, you know, as Prime Minister Carney himself had made an indication that an overture. and stated that, you know, it doesn't mean we agree 100% with everything, you know, how Iran governs itself, but I think that there's an understanding that Canada needs to adapt to what's happening in the world, where we have a shift in from U.S. hegemony to a more multipolar world, with you know China and you know the BRICS.
You know, Canada once led in that department. Canada has maintained relations with Cuba throughout this whole episode of the sanctions, as you, which you pointed out, began in 1960, I believe, roughly. And Canada kept its embassy open while the U.S. was demonizing Cuba. And then, of course, Canada opened relations with China when the U.S. did not recognize China and was opposed to their being a member of the United Nations. But you would think that, my impression is Canadian people were proud of that. We're glad of that, that we had our own way of dealing with other states.
Yes. Yeah, of course. You know, in recent times, you know, before that recent overture, I think that because, you know, Canada's economy is so tied up with the U.S.'s, sometimes that independence is less visible or less the case. But I'm hopeful that, you know, with the aggressions, you know, economic and otherwise, that have happened, changes will be made towards, you know, further distancing, you know, from full agreement with the U.S. Because I think some of the statements that were made, unfortunately, by the Carney administration were, unfortunately, cowardly. I'm sorry to have to say that, but Trump unilaterally began this war with Iran, and Carney stated in one of his first statements that he had not consulted Canada. But at the same time, he was repeating this line that, you know, Iran is, you know, supposedly causing chaos in the region, in its own region, which was, and is the main cause for instability and so on and so forth. And that it must be prevented from getting a nuclear weapon.
Yeah.
These are all tired tropes, and we've seen them so many times, and we don't see that as the case. Iran is not attacking its neighbors without provocation, and its attacks have been, you know, against U.S. bases in the region. And what is likely to happen, you know, if this continues, is Iran's goal is to remove those U.S. bases from that region, and that will be a shift, a big shift in the global power. And it is even doing so just through economic means, right? Just through controlling.
This new policy the new economic aggression that they're talking about. I doubt that they can actually implement it, but they literally is talking of basically trying to create a siege on Iran so that they can't, you know, import, export it, and to bring them, you know, frankly, like in medieval times, bring people to their knees by depriving them of ability to trade and live. That looks like the policy. I can't see Canadians believing in doing that. I want to go back to this issue of Hormuz, and Oman is also, they are in agreement with the Islamic Republic, are they not? That those waterways come under their sovereignty as well as that of Islamic Republic. And that's I believe you pointed out in correspondence with the prime minister or simply as a statement that the United Nations, the agreement over that, the agreement that this is the waterway of Oman and Iran, is under is established in UN under UN protocols, right?
Yes. So we had to, you know, look at the actual, you know, UN statement, and this is that's what we found, and you know, because
I mean, Trump has threatened to bomb Oman.
In those, yes, yes, absolutely. And so Iran and Oman were negotiating on the agreement, and Trump opposed that. So he has threatened to bomb Oman, as he has threatened bombing multiple times. You know, he threatened to destroy Iran's civilization and so on. So, you know, we don't know. It's hard to tell, you know, whether that will actually happen, because sometimes he says something and it backtracks. But, but you know, it's he is struggling to. He has not found an off ramp for his escalation and is flailing. And they simply, you know, what the results have been catastrophic for the U.S. and they are struggling to find some way to reestablish how things were before, but that's it's unlikely to go back. You know, we cannot really rewind time and pretend nothing happened. And the strait was open before that. There was no, you know, now, I mean, now they have to pay tariffs for passing through, or they have to, you know, undergo checks, and that's
simply
a result of their own aggression.
There are mediators. Pakistan has been involved, I guess, the most prominently, I guess, Turkey, but primarily Pakistan played a role, and perhaps others. Wouldn't it be wise for Canada to support mediation? There are, you know, there is an effort being made, which Trump shrugs off, but these are important countries who've been helping to clarify. By the way, you recall that when Trump launched one of his attacks, the mediator said, "No, no, no. There's no basis for an attack. We have an agreement." Would your organization be raising this with ministers and others? Why aren't we part of the mediation process?
Yes. Well, you know, ICC has consistently, in all our statements and letters to the Prime Minister and other parts of the administration, other members of the administration, we have consistently pushed for Canada playing a diplomatic role. You know, we have been against the war, but we cannot stop the U.S. from, you know, bombing. However, as Canadians, we can play a role in.
It must be a strong consensus amongst Iranian Canadians to condemn the bombing, because their own families and property and the dignity of the country is being violated unnecessarily.
Yes, I think so. You know, unfortunately, there are a few people who are a bit deluded, and you know, there's a faction of pro-monarchists who will go to any length to excuse that. And but we have had people reaching out to our organization, actually condemning that kind of behavior. And you know, unfortunately, our organization, in Stand Against War and Sanctions, we have been punished for it by some members of the community. You know, there are Iranian Canadians, like some of the famous ones, Nazanin Afshin Jam, you know, in politics that, you know, are warmongers. And we see it, you know, some people in our community see it as a desire, you know, to of proximity to whiteness and wanting to embody this false notion of white supremacy and superiority. And we need to fix these notions among our own country, countrymen, and the diaspora. So the organization tries to play a diplomatic role there. But, you know, this idea that people are happy to be bombed, that I have heard, you know.
Trump actually said after destroying the school and killing so many and destroying so much property, he said, oh, I had a meeting with leaders here in Washington, and they said, finish the job. But that, frankly, I think the world just laughed at that because it's so absurd that people would say, please bomb me. And yet, because of politics, even Canada joined in that kind of talk, which was irrational. By the way, that just underlines to my mind why we ought to have diplomacy, but also embassies. And isn't there, there must be a consensus, even amongst people who are very unhappy with the Islamic Revolution of 79, they have their own need to travel, they have education issues, they have all, and that should be, I assume, something that, again, that the consensus would be just on practical level, and that the Iranian Canadian Congress must be addressing that. Why doesn't the Canadian government want to facilitate movement and exchange of people, students, or simply to do business, et cetera?
Yes. Well, that's a great point you bring up, because some of the people who are most vocal against Iran among the diaspora, of course, you know, there were different waves of immigration, and people have different political affiliations. But, you know, some of them, maybe they had some proximity to power before the revolution, or their parents, mm-hmm. or so on. But mm-hmm. even these individuals, they are affected by these policies, and sometimes they don't see it coming. So it's a mistake. And, you know, there may be other financial motivations here to take those kinds of directions, financial or political motivation. Our organization has been accused, there are accusations against us because we were against Canada's listing of the IRGC as a terrorist entity. Mm-hmm. Now, why do we do that? In part, it's because of these very practical implications that ordinary people who, for example, in Iran, there's this military service that is obligatory. Ordinary people might be doing their service under the auspices of those organizations, and then they come here, and for, you know, whatever reason, even they have political oppositions, they will still be targeted. They will still be, you know, under extra scrutiny, and have difficulties either crossing the border or, you know, with immigration and so on.
That's part of it. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So it's issues that, you know, pretty much all of the issues that we pick up, it's just rational. We are trying to improve conditions for ordinary people here, and mm-hmm. we don't have to, again, agree with all the policies of Iran.
No, that's the whole reason to have embassies.
We want to people to understand that, you know, opposing war, there's no middle ground there. You cannot, you know, say, I oppose war, but I also oppose the Islamic Republic. Mm-hmm. This is a dangerous position that only causes doubt. And actually, that reminds me of that open letter that was going around in the was it the Guardian? Several academics had signed on to a letter.
To Iranian prisoners. A letter published in an English paper in English, so that the Iranian prisoners would be able to read that. Yes.
So, you know, I have friends here within the prison abolition movement, and you know, I feel for prisoners, but the timing of this was particularly odd. And so, what we did see that some of those signatories later made statements and rescinded their support for this particular letter.
Very important.
And so that's interesting because what, you know, I was, how this letter actually came to my attention was people were commenting that this will be used by the Trump administration to continue the war. So, you know, we may have our own opinions about, you know, various issues within Iran, but we have to know that Iran is being, you know, attacked from all directions, and, you know, I mean, through the media, through, do we call it hot war or, you know, open warfare bombs, and through all economic sanctions, all manner of things. And the enemies of Iran are very powerful and will use any excuse to bring it in that direction. While on their own side, you know, of course, they are not pure, and, you know, and Iran has done its own, you know, media that, you know, this, you know, Trump, who is so, he apparently cares so much about the Iranian prisoners, which Israel bombed the prison, by the way, you know, during the war.
Yes.
And, you know, he, yet the ICE, you know, supporting these actions by ICE to, with impunity, are killing protesters in the street in the U.S. And they are also arresting Iranians who, you know, among the Iranian diaspora who, you know, for whatever reason, chose to live in the United States and may, you know, maybe thought that that would be a better place for them. But, you know, they are, due to these racist, you know, the racist foundations of these countries, unfortunately, in much of the West.
The danger, it's funny how people don't understand, who are trying to take stands on issues such as prisoners, etc., do not put in the forefront what the issues are. That if they're saying, oh, we care about these people, why don't they say, first of all, they would like to see an end to the violence, end to the attacks on this country. And then if when there is proper relations between states, which is the first issue for any member of the United Nations, then you could talk about other issues. But if they only say this is what we care about, you're quite right. It's a pretext for assault. And it is a fact. 1 week later, there is an attack. And people were shocked when they saw that letter in The Guardian, because they said, what is this about? Well, it's about justifying attacks, actually. Mm-hmm. And I hope everyone will kind of study that as how dangerous it is to not deal with fundamentals first. Iran is a member of the United Nations. It's a sovereign country, and it would be happy to exchange diplomats and engage in relations. That doesn't mean you have any ideological alignment. It is simply recognizing a sovereign country.
Absolutely. So, yeah, that's exactly it. We need to resolve these issues of war first. It's like, you know, they say the same thing about, let's say, queer people supporting Palestinians against the genocide, you know.
Yes.
First stop throwing the bombs on the heads of Palestinians, including the queer ones.
Yes.
And then we can talk about, you know.
Yeah, issues such as the fact that they're recognized people, and that the United Nations says that there is to be a Palestinian state. Recognize that, but one assumes that that's what the bombing is about, is to prevent them from having their own country.
Absolutely.
Well, I have to say it's been wonderful to talk to to you, Mona Cassimi, who is the president of the Canadian Congress, Canadian Iranian Congress. It's iccongress.ca. People should go to your site. Mona, I really congratulate the organization. The documents that you're putting up are very well done and very persuasive.
Thank you so
and
much,
Phil. We look forward to hearing it. You do expect this during the next, in coming months, you will be able to have an opportunity to talk to the foreign minister, right?
We hope so. We need to make further outreach in that regard. Also, we have new members added to the board since we had our AGM recently, and we have some new energy, and hopefully we will be expanding our social media outreach. And thank you so much for your
I think the Canadian talk, people,
but I do invite people to check out our website and follow us on social media.
We will follow closely, and I bet the majority of Canadian people are in agreement with your arguments about Canadian diplomacy needing to be even-handed and fair. Thank you very, very much.
Thank you, and take care. Have a nice day.
Bye-bye.